Good morning. This is Pam McElwain coming to you with the diversity news. You know, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission recently finalized a rule to implement the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which poses new compliance questions for employers. And it's all certain to be challenged in court, you know, experts say. The EEOC, the Employee Commission's office, the comprehensive rule will make the protections of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act accessible to workers who need them. The rule makes clear that pregnant workers are entitled to reasonable accommodations that address the wide range of health care needs they may experience, including abortion-related accommodations, without unnecessary barriers or delays. With the overturning of Roe v. Wade, with more and more states criminalizing abortion, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act is bound to be controversial, but it continues to support and protect women's right to their own health care, even with in the workplace. So you're going to find that here we are today once again continuing to talk about the implications and the impact of the legislation that eliminated 50 years of women's rights. So with that, we're going to go right into our show today, Finding and Getting College Right, with our guests Tyrone Wise and Lucas Abbott from the Berklee School of Haas Boost Youth Program. Stay tuned with us. We'll be right back with you after this commercial break.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important. And we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
The world is embracing a remote, globalized, and diverse workforce. Is your organization prepared when it comes to understanding all the nuances of diversity? Diversity MBA can help. From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices, to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. Check out DiversityMBAMagazine.com and take the first step towards transforming your organization.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Pam McElwain, with the Inclusive Voice. What a wonderful day we're having here in Chicago. Ooh, this makes me feel so excited to know that I'm talking. Our guest, as I shared with you earlier, is from the West Coast, so they're enjoying a little better weather than we are. But hey, we're okay with that. We are Chicagoans. So let me say welcome, Lucas and Tyrone. Before we get into the deep dive introductions, I always like to ask our guests, what do you do to keep yourself mentally and physically well? Lucas?
Yeah, thanks for that question. For me, it's a lot of variety in my life, not being stagnant and doing the same thing over and over. So be it exercise or reading an article about something or listening to some music or something, but just variety, just getting things going, firing different parts of my brain, and just trying to stay awake in the world.
Well, and I guess, you know, with the work you do, we're going to talk about that. I guess that helps, you know, fuel the energy as well. So thank you for sharing. How about you, Tyrone?
Yeah, thank you for that question as well. Thank you for having us. For me, it's definitely spending time with family. I love playing sports. I love golf. I've been playing golf and bowling and spending time with my son, who's two now, he'll be three in June. He's just a sponge and a lot of excitement. Never a dull moment with him. And reading and good podcasts, just continuing to feed myself knowledge that helps me to kind of be the better leader and grow as a leader that I am. So I think those are the things that definitely keep me grounded and give me some relax.
That's great. I mean, I think, you know, doing those, you know, intentional things, making those a priority really makes a difference. So thank you for sharing. Our audience could always pick up nuggets, you know, from what folks are doing. And so, you know, today, you guys, as shared with you earlier, you know, our listening audience, you know, finding and getting into the right college, you know, is a crucial stepping stone, you know, in adulthood. And one of the things that we haven't really talked about on our show is really we've been taking a deep dive into what it takes to prepare, you know, for adult life through with the many challenges in growing up and also with this age of overinformation. And then there's, you know, the college admissions process, which can be daunting and fearful in itself. And particularly when you're talking about a top university. And so we wanted to, you know, kind of step back and really understand, you know, what are some of the top programs in the country doing? And, you know, I'm just going to let you guys know, because I know if you listened to our show before, you know, I am a UC Berkeley grad a few times over. So I enjoy the University of California at Berkeley. And today we have with us, as I mentioned earlier, we have with us the Executive Director, Lewis Abbott, and Associate Director, Tyrone Wise, from the BOOST at Berkeley Haas program. So let me tell you, the business school, the name of the business school of UC Berkeley is called the Haas School of Business, HAAS, just so for those of you inquiring minds. Yes, it's up there with Stanford and Harvard and Yale, and we are the Ivy League of the state universities, if you will. So I'm just going to own that, Tyrone and Lucas, so you guys can beat me up later, but, you know, I'm going to own it. And so we're here to talk today, this morning, about, and these guys are up really early talking to us this morning, about, you know, what the unique, outstanding work that BOOST, that Berkeley Haas School program, is doing to support students throughout their high school journey to be ready to go into college, successfully graduate, and become contributing professionals in our community. So with that, I want to spend the first few minutes, Lucas, talking a little bit, you know, about your background and what got you into this work. So I know you have been, you know, working with youth for over 20 years, but share us with a little bit that have, you know, guided your direction for you to end up here.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. And definitely own Berkeley being great, because I agree, even though I didn't go to school there, I agree it is a great institution of higher education for sure. So how I kind of landed in the BOOST world, my background, I studied wildlife at Humboldt State University in California, and then worked as a youth program manager at a wildlife facility that had a hospital and all this stuff. So there's a youth program there. But the students that I was serving were 12 to 18 years old. But as I like to say the story, they used to get dropped off in Porsches and Benzes and all that stuff. And they didn't really need a lot of help. Like, they were going to be okay anyway, because they were from higher socioeconomic classes. And I just didn't feel like I was making a big of an impact as I could. And so we did have one tiny, tiny little outreach program at the place that I used to work at, called Lindsay Wildlife Experience. And that little tiny outreach program was working with the students that were struggling in high school and making them mentors for elementary school students and teaching elementary students about environmental education and all this stuff. And so through that, I found a passion for helping kids that that A, wanted help, and B, needed the help. And so that's where I started looking around and like, I don't want to stay in this like upper class world forever. So I want to help kids that might have more things stacked against them systematically or socially or familial or whatever's going on. I just really want to help the students that need the help and want the help. So I found the program. It was called Yay back in the day when I started, but it was rebranded to Boost in 2016. And I've been there for over 18 years, really helping the kids that are low income, first generation, college bound. We've been very successful, which we can talk about later if you want. The program's been around for 5 years. So
35 years. Did you say 35 years?
Yeah, 35. 1989 it started.
Wow.
I just want to help kids that need the help is what my passion is and why I landed here.
So that's incredible, because it looks like, you know, Lucas, you kind of started, you started giving back in this area. And what was the main driver? Because I'm assuming you're white. Are you a white male?
I am.
Okay. And, you know, because folks can't see you, so I want to say that for them. So what was the main driver?
Radio vibe.
Passion, right? There's passion, clearly, from that. But what really, you know, made you decide? One, you had a love for helping youth, so that helps. But what made you want to help the underserved, at-risk youth? What kind of kept you? I mean, you not only... you know, started in it, but you excelled and created incredible opportunities. But what kept you, sustained in this work?
Yeah, I think it comes back to a lot of lived experiences that kind of guides our path in life, I think. And so growing up as a white male in a middle or upper class area in the Bay Area in California, I remember only one student that was black in my whole class. There's a lot of Latina students, but I remember Jason vividly, and he was treated unfairly, I thought, at that time when I was young and developing my mind and all that stuff. And then going to my first experience with youth was a camp counselor for an asthma camp at Lake Tahoe in California. And so I was in a cabin of 12 boys. And that was, there's some other students of color that were there that weren't being treated the same as everybody else. There's all these things that came in my youth that I was observant of, but I didn't really connect with like how I could change that or be an agent of change or make any impact in the world in a positive place. And so when I found this Boost program, and it was in the interview for the position, I remember there was a bunch of, let's see, like three or four white people in the meeting. There was a Latina, and then the student that was in there was a black student, Sharonda. And I just focused all my energy on like, why did she like this program? And I just gravitated towards helping students that didn't look like me, but I've observed through what I think their lived experience was, and I'm careful not to put myself in their shoes because I don't know. Like I haven't lived that life of having a different skin color, and I don't know, but I try to empathize and help as much as I can from the positions that I've had. It's just giving back and helping the people that, like I said, they want the help and they deserve the help. And so that's what we try to do at Boost is really help those kids that might be treated unfairly at the grocery store or at an institute of higher education or in their high schools or whatever, and just give them a place that's safe and it's very supportive. We're caring, we push them, but it's all through a lot of care and a lot of support and mentoring, and just give them really a safe place to find themselves and find their people and their community where they can have that support to move on to amazing things.
Yeah, and thank you for that, and thank you for your commitment and your story, and that was really important, and being authentic and sharing, because it does take some type of an experience, and you decide if you're going to do more with it or without. So, and it's because of, you know, champions like you, which really is helping this work be meaningful. So thank you so much for that effort. So I haven't forgotten about you, Tyrone. So how are you this morning? And what do you do? You know, a little bit about your background. It's amazing because, I mean, like an overachiever here, but share with us a little bit, you know, of your journey into getting into this work. You have an incredible background in terms of, you know, military and transitions. So share a little bit of that with your, with our listeners, because we have a lot of them that will connect with your story.
No, thank you. So my story, I identify as an African-American black male and grew up in a small town in California, Lathrop, California specifically, and parents out of the Bay Area and L.A. area, but we were found a space in Lathrop. And so I went to the military straight out of high school. I didn't see college as an opportunity for me. My parents, my dad made too much money in quotation marks and air quotes, but we didn't see the money that they specifically were saying that we were making. We didn't see it at the house, and we didn't qualify. I didn't qualify for scholarships, or I didn't qualify for financial aid or anything like that. So military was the next best option for me to really put me in a place to help me to better my life. So I went, spent 8 years in the United States Navy, came out of the Navy, and in a specialty of dental prosthetics. And so I was looking to go to the dental school. And so I started looking at dental school and just talking to mentors and understanding what my journey was going to look like. Pivoted a little bit to psychology. I was looking to be a psychologist working with military families coming back from war. And so that was my goal, is to be a family therapist, a family and marriage and relationship therapist, and started going to school for that. But saw a field in student affairs, which isn't really talked about in education, especially higher education, the student affairs degree. And so student affairs degree is everything opposite of education in the college institution. So when you go to college, you have education, which is your classes, and then you have student affairs, which is everything non-academic. So your housing and residential life, your fraternity and group life, the student, your resource and support is all considered student life. And so found that that was an actual degree that you can get in and working with people. I enjoy and love mentoring and helping people and being a veteran, learning how to navigate the higher education landscape is very important for me. So having those skill sets and understanding that, saw a need that I can help others in the way that I would have done in the psychology field, but helping them in the education field was more rewarding and more impactful for me, because we're helping people navigate opportunities to better their families in a different way. And so I found student affairs, got my master's in education administration at the University of Pacific, where also I got my bachelor's in psychology, and got into the student affairs field and just really loved the opportunity to really help mentor and nurture tomorrow's leaders through education, and higher education at that. And so I came to Haas working at the full-time MBA program. I did student services and DEA liaison for that, as well as a veteran staff leader as well, and leader of the Black Staff and Faculty Organization at UC Berkeley. And just found mentorship and amazing leaders at the campus of UC Berkeley. And then the opportunity came for me to work with Bruce, and I've always had an affinity for working with our youth, because our youth are our future, and understanding what my experience was as a youth of color coming through high school. I saw that need, and during my time working with in higher education, I also did side work working with organizations that are very similar to Bruce. Specifically, one is Willie B. Atkins, organization out of Vallejo, which focused on helping African-American youth get into higher education with the focus of experiencing HBCUs. And so that was a focus that I had and a skill set that I had. And so when I had the opportunity to work with Bruce full-time doing this work, that is very, very much parallels with Willie B. Atkins' organization. situation, I jumped at that opportunity to be able to really pour into our tomorrow's leaders and be able to help them navigate what higher education looks like with the skill set and understanding that I have. And it was a great opportunity, and I'm so fortunate and so grateful to be here because, as we said, we've been
for 35 years. So Tyrone, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to finish this up in just 1 second. We're going to go to commercial break and come back and hear. I want to talk a little bit more to Tyrone about an incredible journey that he's made, has and continues to, and the impact that Lucas has had. This is just a fabulous team and what's going on here. So stay tuned with us. We'll be right back and get more boost for the youth.
We believe healthcare should treat the whole person and the whole community. At UPMC, we aim to do just that by partnering with organizations that help bring fresh and healthy food to the people who need it most. Because life-changing is caring for you before you ever walk in our doors. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
From emails that get no response, to improper billing and shipping, to inventory mistakes, waste can be an expansive, encompassing problem. With a track record of success that includes over $7 billion in successful projects, Bold Business has been helping clients over two decades. Whether you seek to enhance the performance of current anti-waste and waste initiatives, reduce reputational damage in the face of heightened public scrutiny, or simply safeguard cost efficiency, Bold Business has the answers. Check out boldbusiness.com for more information.
Welcome back. I'm Pam McElvain, your host on The Inclusive Voice. I have here with me Lucas and Tyrone from Boost at Berkeley Haas Youth Program. And we, if you just joined us, Tyrone was just sharing with us his background. And Tyrone, what I love about your unique experience is, you know, you're a veteran and you stayed attached to giving back and serving in many different capacities as a veteran. So, you know, thank you for your service and thank you for doing that, because I'm sure the connections that you were able to make were very meaningful. And still today, right, still today, organizations, large employers are still trying to make sure they make those connections and transitions for veterans.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to acknowledge that, because you talked a lot about that, but also, you know, you brought something up that was really, you know, I don't know if it was unique or not, but when you talked about, you know, your parents, you know, were in that middle where they made too much money to qualify to get loan and grant support for education. But on the flip side, you know, you saw the military as your option. Usually the military is the only option, you know, because maybe, you know, other scenarios, but not so much what you described. So let me just ask you real quickly before we shift over. Did you seek out the military as an option, or were you courted through other avenues? I'd just be curious to people to be aware of the ways that you can find a military as an optional career.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I actually sought out the military. My grandma worked for the Army and retired working for the Army, and so she was very knowledgeable in what the military experience looked like, and she literally gave me two options. She said, either you're going to go to college or you're going to go to the military, and as we both understood, the college wasn't an option because we didn't have finances to be able to do that, and we didn't have the support. And so she said, well, if you're going to go into the military, you got two options, Air Force or Navy, because she had worked in the Army, and so she had seen all the inner workings of all the branches. And so she said, either you're going to the Air Force or the Navy. And so I kind of did some research on what the organization looked like as a whole. And the military was the best opportunity for travel and to experience and to have job experience. And so I joined the Navy in that regard. And I joined at 17. So my mom and dad actually had to sign for me to go in. At 17 years old, I was in the military. So it was a great experience. Okay. I got to travel. I learned a lot.
Okay, well, that, and that's a good story, the familiar part of it. So, you know, that's really good to know. And, you know, we just want to know, and I want to ask you guys about that, too, is, you know, is the military an option, you know, in terms of college opportunities for your high school youth? But before we get into that, let me, can I just ask, you know, what, you know, Lucas, what is, you know, what is the mission of Boost, and what is your role there?
Yeah, so we're supporting the students to get to higher education, and to answer your question about military, like we still look at that as higher education. So anything after high school, it is a bonus for us. So we just want the kids to continue their education, be it community college, be it military, be it straight to a 4-year. We've had students that take a gap year, and that's fine, and then return back to school. So the whole mission is just to support kids that want and need the support to go on to higher education and to better their lives and their family and their community. And so that's what we do, and it's through a suite of programming. We have a 4-year continuum that runs through a whole bunch of stuff with heavy mentoring component from the MBA and undergrad students at Haas and the greater UC Berkeley community. We also have partnerships with the Charles Schwab Foundation that helps with financial literacy, that lends their curriculum and their employees. We have a college advisor that does 100% like one-on-ones with all of our students or our scholars, and helps them on the path of applying to college and looking at the scholarships and all that stuff and all the options, because we really want to support the individual. So we're a pretty small program as far as youth programs go. We have about 130 kids in the program right now, and we're going to start to grow with this incoming class that just applied as of last Friday. The deadline was done for that class. So we are going to be growing a little bit to get to about 200. But we just really want to support the individual. And I think that's something that's unique about us, that it's not like a one-size-fits-all that you should go to UC Berkeley or you should go to the military or you should do this. It's like we really take this scholar that we have, talk to them about their life and what they want, what are their goals, and then guide them through that process of finding themselves and finding their community that will support them. And so Boost is just a part of that community that they'll have in their pocket forever to like reach back to or to look favorably on from the past. So that's kind of high level of what we do.
Okay, so that's good. And then, so your team, you and Tyrone together, you just described generally, you know, the coaches and the different services and things you have. So Tyrone, what is your job? What's your role?
Yeah, so I help be leading in recruiting. So we just finished, as Lucas said, we just finished application opportunity closed on Friday the 12th. So prior to that, I go out and do recruiting.
Hold on. Before you leave, hold on. You guys, give me a pause in there. Okay, you guys are going in. I love it. But before you go on, so tell me, what does that mean? You said recruiting. So what does that mean?
Yeah, good question. So recruiting, we go to the middle schools within the greater Bay Area, and we have partnerships with a lot of middle schools because of what we do. We actually go to
How old are the middle school students? I'm breaking in there. How old are the middle school students?
Yeah, so we present at 8th grade. So we present to 8th graders. They can only apply to our program in the spring of 8th grade, so that when they graduate, they start their freshman year in our cohort program. We're cohort-based. So we recruit to all 8th graders in the Bay Area and greater Bay Area schools. And we recruit there, and then we encourage them to apply. Applications close April 12th. We review applications, call them in for interviews, interview them, see if they're a good fit for our program, if they understand kind of what this program expectation is. And then they're accepted in our program. I lead a summer academy, which is a week of orientation for them to kind of meet their cohort mates, create community. So when they start in the fall, they know each other. They may not know each other well, but they're familiar with each other. So they're not starting like they would at a college where they don't know anybody. They're 30 plus scholars that all are familiar with each other when we start in the fall. So I lead programming through all of that, as well as lead the programming for the academic year. And they're in our program for 4 years. So we meet once a month for 4 years. And we have great results and great testimonials of our program from that.
Oh, that's incredible. So, I mean, you guys truly are dealing with the pipeline. I mean, you're talking 13 years old, and that's what I'm trying to convince corporations to do and large employers, that they have to start somewhere to build the pipeline. I left Berkeley in 1984. Oops, I just dated myself. Okay, so I missed the launch 5 years. You guys started in 89. Which was really incredible. Let me ask you, both of you, but Lucas, did you guys run into any, you've been there for 18 years, but if you ran into any barriers within that time and what, obstacles have you overcome?
Yeah. In your time frame,
while you're there, I know it's been around 35 years, but you've been there 18, so...
I've seen some things in that 18 years for sure. So I think the only thing that comes to mind with a real obstacle or hurdle is on the funding side of stuff. And so obviously this isn't free to run. It's free for the kids. So we don't charge any of the families for anything because they are low income first gen. But it's a free program for them. So 4-year college prep program for 100% free. But part of my job is fundraising and all of that. So there's a misconception out there with some people that, oh, you're at the Haas School of Business. Like, that's a great business school at UC Berkeley, which is a great university. So, like, you just get paid and, like, money just flows to you and you do the program. And I'm like, hold up. Like, we're a self-sustained unit within the Haas School of Business. And so that's part of my job is fundraising our budget and doing all that. So I assumed that seat in 2014. And so for 10 years I've been on the fundraising side of it. But prior to that, there were a couple very discreet times that I thought the doors might shut and lights turned off and we have no money, so we're done. That would be the big challenge. I think on the classroom management stuff is what I hear about a lot with my colleagues in youth program type stuff. They're like, oh, it's so hard to work with teenagers. But for us, like what Tyrone was talking about with the recruiting, we get the opportunity and the blessing to choose the students through an application interview process who will get accepted into our program. And so we have more applicants than spots always. So we have a very competitive program on the recruiting side to get the kids into the program. And so we have very little discipline. Like there's never kids in my 18 years, like I'm saying, like I can count on one hand kids that I've had to kick out of the program because of discipline. And so, I mean, that's awesome. Amazing. These kids want the help and they want to succeed and they want to better their lives. So we're already starting ahead of the game there, even though society and the world has kind of put them a step back from a lot of other people. In our program, they already have a leg up because they want it and they're motivated and they show up and they do the work and they go off to do amazing things. So yeah, not a lot of difficulties other than curriculum change, things like that with like the standardized testing. Like that was something on the curriculum side that when COVID happened and all the universities went to test optional, test blind, we used to do a very intense SAT prep course for 15 weeks every Saturday. The 11th graders would come in and do that, and that was the most intense part of the entire 4-year curriculum. But then that all kind of went away, so I'm like, all right, our most super intense part of the 4-year continuum, we don't need to do that anymore because the colleges aren't even looking at SAT scores anymore. And historically, the students that we're working with didn't score as well. And so I didn't really like that anyway, but we're trying to like level the playing field there. And then as a fun anecdote there, right when everything went test optional, we had the most kids in the entire 35 years get into UC Berkeley. So right when they stopped looking at that standardized testing as part of the holistic application process, when they took that out, all the students that looked like B students all had better options. And so we're not going back to SAT prep.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, that's a real thing. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
Kudos to you on that. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come right back and really talk about, I mean, I'm loving to hear what you said, what you guys have just shared, but I'd like to hear, you've had, you know, thousands of folks, thousands of students that have come through the program, but, you know, maybe a couple success stories that each of you guys can share with us. We'll be right back with you. Stay tuned with us. When you hear about early investment is a real thing, early investment in young talent, even if at risk, really being more at risk around economic status, not around brain power. We'll be right back with you.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important, and we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
Everyone's talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Let Diversity MBA Media bring you up to speed on the discussion. With benchmarking services that help enterprises gauge and expand the diversity of their workforces, to fresh, insightful, deep dive articles on the Diversity MBA website, CEO Pam McIlvaine leverages years of experience and some of the foremost thought leaders on diversity, equity, and inclusion to spread the DEI message and curate content that educates and enlightens. In addition, Diversity MBA Media hosts annual conferences that bring together speakers from all across the DEI spectrum, with thousands of virtual attendees learning industry best practices from a wide range of perspectives. Check out Diversity MBA Media, join the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement, and be a part of the discussion. www.diversitymbamagazine.com.
Welcome back. I hope you guys are staying tuned, staying here with us, listening to this great information. But before we go on and talk about some success stories from our colleagues, you know, there is, you know, all these major universities that have these incredible investment, you know, what do we call them? Help me out, Lucas. The universities have their
outreach
funds.
Programs.
Not the outreach program, the big money, the big buckets of money.
Endowments.
Yeah. Okay, well, they have their endowments, but I'm going to tell you the work, and I know we're really only sitting the ice, you know, of what the tip of the ice, if you will, of what you guys do, but I really want you to think about, you know, really what you're doing, the lives you're changing and how you're doing that and what makes your program uniquely different. Because I hadn't really heard about another program this robust before. And I want to celebrate this work that you guys are doing, not just because you're coming from my alma mater, but because it's significant work. And so with that, I'm going to, Tyrone, first I'll have you go and share a success story. And then also, Lucas, I'd like you to think about maybe a great success story you can share. And what I want folks to know why you're uniquely different than the standard program there. So you want to kick us off, Tyrone?
Yeah, so for me, so just full disclosure, I've only been with Boots for about a year. I just eclipsed the year April 4th with my 1-year anniversary. I have had the opportunity of meeting some amazing alums and just hearing their stories. So one alum that specifically comes to mind was a gentleman by the name of Will. He went he was a booster. At the time, I believe he was a part of the Yay era, which was Young Entrepreneurs at Hof. And we changed the name because we realized we weren't really making entrepreneurs. So we changed it to Booster, to boosting them up into the next opportunity, boosting them up in their career. And so he was wanted to go to USC, first generation low income, went to USC. And he's doing an amazing work. He started he's actually created his own business, the irony of that. But in USC, he learned how to do those skills and learned that opportunity. And he attributes everything that he's done to the Boost program because of the opportunities that they've given him as African American male in a low income. And USC is USC. It's a very prestigious school, but it's also a very expensive school. To be able to get into USC and to do the things that he's been able to do after leaving is a huge testament to our program. There's a bunch of other alumni that are coming to my mind, but I think first he was the one, as you were asking that was the first person that came to my mind, and I hope I didn't take Lucas's alumni, but he has 18 years of teaching
others. No, he's got 18 years.
So I'm sure he will have a problem.
He got 18. No, and I love that too, being able to, USC for those of us that are in Chicago, in the Chicagoland, that's equivalent to University of Chicago, privately held, very, very, very expensive universities and top tier in the area. So what comes to mind for you, Lucas, in terms of a different type of success story?
That's very hard with 18 years. I honestly think every Boost kid
is
a success story.
Okay.
As a collective.
Let me ask you this. Okay. How many of them come out of your program, go into college, and graduate?
So we just did a longitudinal study from classes of 2010 to 2019. And so in those 10 years, our retention rate was 84%. And so we brought in 329. We graduated 276 of them there. And then of those students that graduated the Boost program, over 98% went on to higher education. And of those, over 80% of them got a four-year degree. Just those numbers, and it's not just random colleges, like six of the eight Ivy Leagues. We have kids go there, a lot of HBCUs, a lot of UC Berkeley. We have 29 UC Berkeley graduates that have come out of that 10 years. And so they're all super successful. Like if I did pick one, I'd say Christian is my guy that I hold close to the Boost success. It's holistic because he went to Howard, got his degree out there, and then he's from Oakland in California. And now he has a kid, he has a family, he's an Oakland firefighter. He's worked in a whole bunch of youth programs. He ran like the African American Male Achievement Program at one of the middle schools here in California, and he's just done all this stuff, and he's the epitome of like what is right with the youth. Yeah. Like he had the right mindset. He worked hard. He did everything that he could to help his community. I'm just getting goosebumps thinking about him because just all these kids are so amazing. And what you're saying about, I want to highlight that everybody trying to reach younger and like corporations that are trying to get younger, and you really got to like get into the mindset of who you're serving, because there's so many people that are all like way removed from youth, and they're like, I know how to fix this problem, but the kids don't relate to them. And so what we do, what I'm very proud of in our curriculum, is it's all real world stuff. So it's realistic. It's time sensitive. It's not reading out of a book something that happened 10 years ago. It's doing a case study consulting project that's with a real company that wants real answers from our 14-year-olds are presenting to CEOs and marketing directors of Levi Strauss or Drivers or the Oakland Zoo or Open A's. Like real companies are coming in with real people with a project, and then they write business plans. It's their interest. So we're not dictating what the kids are going to learn. We ask the kids, like, what are your ideas of stuff and what would you like to learn? And then we guide them on that path. And so if you want to help the kids, like, ask the kids what they want help with. Like, that's a big misstep, I think, that we think we're, as the adults, like, we're the smarter, more mature ones that know that. And yes, on some part of that book, 100%. But there's another chapter that you've got to read of what do the kids want? Where are they at? So we can reach them where they're at to bring them where we need them to go. And we know they need to get there and we know how to get there. But if they don't have that first step of interest, like, it's a lost cause right away. So that's something I see a lot in youth programs, that when they get off track a little bit.
Yeah, and that's huge. And you've also talked about, you know, at 14, you know, where a lot of the universities or companies, not university companies, you know, they're hiring, the employers are hiring the students that's already in college to, you know, for internships and these other opportunities, and not recognizing that these young minds, you know, they can do complex work, and you just, you know, have to mentor them through it and be there for them. So thank you for that. I'm going to ask, it's not a controversial question, Tyrone, but I just want to say, how much impact do you think you, with your experience and background and as a Black male, provides, you know, role modeling and, you know, and excitement and opportunities for real success from the youth that you, and I know you have youth from all, you know, all backgrounds, ethnicities and what have you, but still you're a person, a man of color, for some college, when, you know, this, these great stories that you've had, how much of that connection to them do you think helps them see their own realization?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very important question. And I think there's a huge impact that I'm able to provide. It just does something when you have somebody who looks like you that is in positions of authority, positions of power, especially within an educational setting. Nothing special or surprised to say that I work at a PWI, a predominantly white institution, that is University of California at Berkeley. And so having representation matters. And when you have somebody who is a person of color in position, it gives students an opportunity to see that I can do it too. And when I'm able to give my experiences and help them navigate and be able to bring in other people of color that have worked in similar positions, or be able to bring in people of color that can give mentorship, that helps them to see that it's not that I can make it, I can do it. There's somebody that me that understands my experiences. I can talk about experiences that they have had or will have in education, because the system doesn't change. And so the experiences that they're getting in high school are sometimes the same experiences that they're going to get in college, because of the demographics of the schools that they're at. And so being able to help them navigate that and them understand that I'm not speaking from something that I haven't experienced gives validity, but also it gives encouragement that it's possible. And I think that's something that's very special that I bring in the conversation.
Okay. I agree. I think that's very real in terms of, you know, being possible and probable. So I know we have a few minutes left, but I want to ask Lucas, you know, you're talking about, you know, you already described with the ROI of investing. We're just going to do some real talk here, you know, of someone investing in your program. What is, you know, where one can people go, both individual people as well as organizations, to learn how to, where they can invest and contribute to the work that you guys are doing?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to our website. It's the first place I'd probably send people. So that's at www.haas.berkeley.edu, and that's Berkeley with two E's, as you know, and then /boost, B-O-O-S-T. So that there's a website there that describes some stuff. There's a donate button on there if anybody is financially inclined and wants to support financially. And then also just emailing me or Tyrone. And my email is labott, A-B-B-O-T-T, at haas.berkeley.edu, or just berkeley.edu works as well. And just send me an email if you have any questions or you want to get involved. With the whole COVID thing, Zoom became an option. So people in the Chicago area, if they want to help out and lend some expertise on a Zoom call to some students or something, let's talk about it. Or if there's some donations from companies, let's talk about it. So I'd say check the website, email is best for me, and just hit us up and see how you want to support. So we welcome all types of support for sure.
Great. It's not just Chicago. We just happen to be based here. So this is national and global. So folks all over the world.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, then let's go.
Definitely all over the country can contribute and be a part of, you know, this continuing journey of this work. So, you know, I have to ask you guys, you know, I've got to ask, one, definitely thank you for this work. And we want to, you know, definitely be able to support it even more. But I've got to ask you, with the Supreme Court ruling, you know, as you know, one, eliminating affirmative action programs, and then, you know, really audaciously hit the college admissions program to even, I don't know what the words are, to be honest with you, but to create even more competitiveness going forward for underrepresented and diverse students. I'd like both of you to give me a quick, you know, response to this, but, you know, has the ruling affected your ability to recruit students and get them into four-year universities at all? And maybe I'll ask you that one, Tyrone. And then, Lucas, what effect do you think the future of this decision may have on other ethnicities and identities and genders getting into college programs? So the first question, throwing to you, Tyrone, has this decision ruling impacted your program to graduate, to matriculate students into four-year universities?
No, I don't think that has impacted our program. One, because we are a nonprofit, so the funds, when those challenges came out originally, it impacted the state-funded programs, and so we aren't state-funded, we're a nonprofit. So that was one kind of thing that was kind of the good on the side. And Lucas, please correct me if I'm misspeaking on that, but to my knowledge, yeah, I don't think that hindered our work.
Okay.
But it definitely, in the education spaces, that working at UC Berkeley when I was at the full-time MBA during that time, there were some challenges that we did face because of the state funds that we did get. But again, Hops is very, and UC Berkeley is very smart to have money put aside for those programs. So it didn't impact it, but it could have had they not had the forethought to kind of have a buffer in non-state funds to be able to fund the programs.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. And Lucas, for you, that's really good news to hear, because, and I'd like to think that that's a practice that a lot of mainstream universities were able to do, but I know there's also a lot of them that did not. So that's the reality. And thank God you're leading the pack. And so Lucas, what do you think the future holds? What, you know, I'm now making you put on that, you know, that mature experience hat and share with us. What do you think the impact for the future for diverse students? What message would you have for us there?
I mean, that the future is unknown. That's why it's exciting and scary, right? So I'm not going to pretend to know what's happening, but I'm very, very hopeful for the future that things will happen in a positive way, but also with the hope there needs to be feet on the ground and actionable stuff that's going on, and that's where I think Boost is very well positioned to help all the scholars that come through Boost. I have no doubt, I would bet everything that I have in my life that they will be successful, because of everything that we give to them and the energy and the enthusiasm that they bring to us. It's just this great magic moment of amazing youth with amazing mentors and a curriculum that's been well designed to, like I said before, be realistic and relevant. I'm extremely hopeful for the future. I have no doubts that Boost scholars will be hireable. They'll be having options for different universities when they get to that stage. I think the world is a whole different conversation of how messed up things are and how much work we got to do on the policy side. I don't think we have enough time in this meeting to go through that answer of what the future holds, but I firmly believe the answer to all the really big problems that are going on is the grassroots programs like ours that can be literally anywhere, and just have some caring adults and some financial resources behind it that can help and just get out there and help the youth. Because like Tyrone said, I mean, it's cliche, but like they are the future. Like that's the one thing that for sure they're going to be around longer than us. So we really need to invest in them in a wholehearted and honest and caring and supportive way. And then I think things will start changing is my hope.
Well, I will tell you, I'm right there with you with your hope, and I'm not one to predict the future, but we do analytics, predictive analytics. We have a whole department that focuses there. And I can tell you they are going to continue to matriculate because of organizations like yours that are committed to making sure it happens. And also their employers that are going to make sure this is an opportunity. The work that you guys are doing is an opportunity for employees not to give back, but to invest and the talent coming forward. So Tyrone and Lucas, I want to thank you both so very much for joining me this morning in this talk about this incredible work that you're doing, truly providing impact. And I'm going to encourage everybody out there to go to the website. Tell me the website again, Tyrone.
Yes, it's www.haas.com.
HAAS.berkeley.edu. And then you can just hit Boost, BOOST, right?
/Boost.
Oh, /Boost. Got it. So,
yes.
www.haas.berkeley.edu.
Haas.berkeley.edu/boost, BOOST.
Right. Haas.berkeley.edu/boost.
Yep.
Excellent. So let's go and there. Go ahead.
No, yeah, I just want to say just the power of access, and I think that's one of the things that I think is really important about our program is that it shows that anybody can do it if they have the access and resources to be able to do that. There's a lot of misnomers that kids of color do not have the ability to do these things.
Tyrone, we're going to have to wrap it up, and I agree. Power of access, I don't like having to wrap it up so soon, but the power of access
is so true.
And what we're going to do, and we're going to have some of that information on our site, diversityindiamagazine.com, that you can be able to go there as well. But we want to thank both you, Lucas and Tyrone, for your incredible work. Lucas Abbott, the executive director, 18 plus years doing this work all his life, and Tyrone Wise, veteran, who's taking over transfer of his skills and all his passions and all learning to get this done. So let's create access for more opportunities. So thank you guys for joining our show. We look forward to reaching out and reconnecting again.
At UPMC, we believe care goes beyond our walls and into our communities. That's why we support organizations and individuals who help people prosper by giving them skills and training for employment, including right here at UPMC. Because life-changing is providing people a chance to grow. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
from an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers. Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. But Diversity MBA's education push extends beyond the public realm and into the private sector. Thanks to DMBA, enterprises embarking on their DEI journey have access to training webinars, leadership indexes, and more, all of which can help educate and transform a workforce. Embrace DEI. Diversity MBA can help. Visit www.diversitymbamagazine.com for more information.